Chapter 4. It was raining hard and the traffic was heavy in New Orleans when I parked off St. Charles and ran for the colonnade in front of the Pearl. The window was steamed from the warmth inside, but I could see Cleet Purcell at the counter, a basket of breadsticks and a whiskey glass and a schooner of beer in front of him, reading the front page of the Times-Picayune. "Hey, big man," he said, folding his paper, grinning broadly when I came through the door. His face was round and Irish, scarred across the nose and through one eyebrow. His seersucker suit and blue pork pie hat looked absurd on his massive body. Under his coat, I could see his nylon shoulder holster and blue-black 38 revolver. "Mitch, give David a dozen," he said to the waiter behind the counter, then turned back to me. "Hang on a second." He knocked back the whiskey glass and chased it with beer, blew out his breath, and widened his eyes. He took off his hat and mopped his forehead on his coat sleeve. "You must have had a rocky morning," I said. "I helped repossess a car because the guy didn't pay the vig on his bond. His wife went nuts, said he wouldn't be able to get to work. His kids were crying in the front yard. Really gives you a sense of purpose. Tonight I gotta pick up a skip in the Iberville project. I got another one hiding out in the Desire. You wanna hear some more?" The waiter set a round metal tray of raw oysters in front of me. The shells were cold and slick with ice. I squeezed a lemon on each oyster and dotted it with Tabasco. Outside, the green-painted iron streetcar clanged on its tracks around the corner of Canal and headed up the avenue toward Lee Circle. "Anyway, run all this Mingo Bloomberg stuff by me again," Cleet said. I told him the story from the beginning, at least most of it. "What stake would Bloomberg have in a guy like Aaron Crown?" I said. He scratched his cheek with four fingers. "I don't get it either. Mingo's a made guy. He'd been mobbed up."